Welcome to Newport Beach in the Rearview Mirror, a podcast about the people and events, famous and forgotten, that shaped Newport Beach. I'm Bill Lobdell.
Try imagining a place where it's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you a shelter from the storm.
Late in the summer of 1968, massive swells generated by Hurricane Liza, 1,000 miles off the coast of Mexico, marched in uniform lines towards Newport Beach, where disaster seemed inevitable. Earlier that summer, as well as for several years before, storm waves had grabbed huge chunks of the beach in West Newport and taken them into the sea, never to be returned. What had been nearly 200 feet of sand between the ocean and the homes was now, in the widest places, just 10 feet. But in most spots, the beach had completely disappeared, along with some oceanfront home patios, which had broken off and crumbled down the 10-foot sand cliff that had been carved out by the waves. Without any fortification, the oncoming hurricane swell would claim blocks and blocks of vulnerable homes sitting literally on the edge of a sandy precipice. So, residents, the city of Newport Beach, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers jumped into action. At low tide, bulldozers pushed sand back in front of the homes, homeowners stacked sandbags along their property, and workers hastily constructed a 4-foot-high concrete wall. All of these measures would prove no match for the insatiable appetite of the angry waves. But what did save the day was the Army Corps of Engineers redirecting to Newport Beach trucks filled with granite boulders that had been bound for the under-construction breakwater in Dana Point. Once those boulders were in West Newport, they were unloaded in a fashion that reinforced the sand cliff and blocked the waves from crashing into the houses. Though the temporary measure worked, the problem remained as it had on and off for decades. From the Newport Pier to the city's border at the Santa Ana River, the beach was often missing in Newport Beach. A permanent solution had to be found, and quickly. Since this won't be a surprise to anyone who's spent time in Newport Beach, let's skip to the happy ending. The Army Corps of Engineers, with an assist from the city, trucked in 3.6 billion pounds of sand and built 8 small finger jetties, more accurately called groins, in the late 1960s and early 1970s to keep that sand in place. Those actions not only saved the beach, but the groins caused even more sand to accumulate in some places. Today, the average width of the beach is more than a football field in length. To paraphrase Elton John, the beach was back. But this is not to say the jetties provided the perfect solution. Very occasionally, imported sand is brought in to give the beach a little touch-up. But all in all, the jetties have worked beautifully. From today's vantage point, putting jetties along the beaches of West Newport to keep the sand where it should be seems like an obvious solution. But getting there was marked by controversy and intrigue, which included bizarre but seriously considered potential fixes, such as making the sand radioactive to trace where the beach was disappearing to. And this bonkers idea was actually enacted. Other fixes included a rock breakwater, a portable floating breakwater made of rubber, and a shallow reef just 100 yards from shore. And with that background, let's dig into how those 8 jetties saved the beach and the homes near the ocean on the west side of town. Here are 10 things to know about the case of the missing beach in West Newport. Number 1, the problem of beach erosion was not new. The case of the missing beach went all the way back to 1910 when large waves destroyed the beach and ripped up the boardwalk in West Newport. And the same thing happened 2 years later. In 1934, another storm wiped out the beach and also sent some homes to Davy's Locker. Other houses, the lucky ones, were marooned on their stilts. That's how they were built back then, on stilts, surrounded by water. A later storm in the 1930s wiped out all of the homes between 50th and 55th Street. I mean, can you imagine? Every single home gone. Other houses were saved when the city dragged them off the beach and out of danger. And yeah, those were mostly inexpensive vacation cottages that I guess were easily moved. Fortunately, the most extensive dredging Newport Harbor has ever seen was happening at the same time as part of the Depression-era Workers' Progress Administration, or WPA, program. Workers transferred 7 million cubic yards of sand from the bottom of the bay to the shrinking beach of West Newport. And that solved the problem for about three decades until the early 1960s, when a series of storms once again resulted in the West Newport Beach disappearing. Let's pause here and answer the question, why did this extensive sand erosion start to happen in the 1950s and sped up in the 1960s with no returning sand in sight? Well, up until the mid-20th century, Mother Nature always managed to return the sand she took, though it may have taken years for the beach to fully be restored. But all of this changed after construction in the 1940s of flood control channels, harbors, and other developments in Orange County, which greatly reduced the introduction and circulation of sand and sediment from local rivers, streams, and bays, thereby robbing local beaches of their natural restorative abilities. And there's one other contributing factor to the utter disappearance of the beach in West Newport. Even into the 1960s, the science of beach erosion and restoration was, well, inexact, to be generous. Newspaper articles and other reports from the time outlined competing theories, some diametrically opposed to each other, about what needed to be done to restore the beach in West Newport. So, as the beach threatened to swallow up West Newport homes, no one could know with any confidence what would keep sand on the beach. The second thing to know about the case of the missing beach in West Newport. From the early to mid-1960s, the favored solution to solve the sand erosion problem was to build, get this, a 1.5-mile-long breakwater from the Newport Pier to 60th Street. It was thought that this heavy-handed solution would work no matter the cause of the beach erosion, and there were plenty of theories about the causes. Did storm waves in the winter strip the sand away? Well, the breakwater would block those waves and keep the sand in place. Did the storm waves from the summer hurricanes rob the beach of its sand? If that was true, the breakwater would stop those waves as well. But before the breakwater project could get underway, and it had received approval from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the County of Orange, residents rose up and protested that the breakwater, which they derisively called the Rock Curtain, would A, be a terrible and permanent eyesore just off the coast, and B, ruin the beach experience by replacing world-class waves with stagnant water. They didn't want Newport to become Long Beach South. As someone who grew up in Long Beach and literally never went to that beach one time, I would have agreed. And by the way, this wasn't the craziest Newport breakwater idea. The U.S. Rubber Company offered to build off the coast of West Newport what it called a portable floating breakwater made of, what else, rubber. The third thing to know. Defeating the 1.5-mile breakwater proposal involved the use of radioactive sand. And before we explain that further, some context is needed. For millions of years, the Santa Ana River flowed through what's now Upper Newport Bay and into the ocean. And remember, this was long before the peninsula existed. The river's steady flow into the sea over eons carved into the ocean floor what's now known as the Newport Submarine Canyon, a massive underwater trench that begins near the Newport Pier. The trench is why the Newport Wharf was built there in 1890. The Submarine Canyon provided the deep water needed to accommodate large ships which loaded and unloaded cargo at the wharf. Fun fact, you can still see the ancient underwater trench today in some satellite photos. Just look for the deep blue water next to the Newport Pier. Okay, back to the beach erosion and the proposed breakwater. The theory in the 1960s about West Newport's beach erosion was that waves pulled sand off the beach, and eventually that sand got trapped in the Newport Submarine Canyon, never to return. A breakwater would solve this problem by simply blocking all the waves. But protesting residents asked government officials to prove their theory before taking such a drastic and permanent measure as building a breakwater. If the sand wasn't being trapped in the trench, the residents' reasoning went, maybe there was a better way to keep sand on the beach. To try and prove their theory that sand was being trapped in the canyon, officials from the Army Corps of Engineers needed to track the sand that was washed away by the waves. Though it sounds, and it was, completely insane, they made sections of sand radioactive so the grains glowed green and orange and, in theory, could be easily tracked. The ill-conceived and dangerous plan didn't work. For 18 months, scuba divers checked the underwater trench for glowing grains of green and orange sand and didn't spot a one. Because of that, the breakwater idea along the beach of West Newport finally died. Though I'm sure that radioactive sand will be out there somewhere, likely for the next, 250,000 years. Number four. A third breakwater was proposed just off the Santa Ana River. This one, which was also pushed by the Corps of Engineers for a couple years, was eventually determined to be unneeded and fell out of favor in 1966. So if you're counting, Newport Beach fought and killed three different breakwater proposals. Number five. In 1967, another idea was floated. Why not build a 2-mile-long underwater reef 100 yards off the coast of West Newport? And since stopping beach erosion had turned into an emergency with the endangered homes, have two ships, each 600 feet long, anchor off the coast to form a temporary breakwater. And he even came up with drawings to illustrate his idea that showed, among other mechanical contraptions, floating conveyor belt to deliver the boulders that would make up the reef, along with a 100-page proposal. His idea made the front pages of the local newspapers, but a year later, the authorities would reject it. Number six. By 1967, the beach in West Newport deteriorated so much that sand replenishment, which had been the temporary go-to solution for years couldn't keep up with the erosion. With each storm, the waves cause larger and larger pieces of the beach to disappear. Lifeguard stations were moved off the beach, volleyball courts vanished into the sea, and the ocean got within a few feet of the homes. The debate over what to do about beach erosion and restoration in West Newport had gone on for 5 years without any resolution. If government officials did not act soon, the oceanfront homes and those right behind them would be lost along with the beach. Number 7. Under pressure, the Army Corps of Engineers and the City of Newport Beach decided that small finger jetties might be the answer, but no one knew for sure. So they decided to experiment by building a single jetty made of steel girders and sheet metal at 40th Street. Why steel? Because it was easy to build and easy to disassemble in case it didn't work. Of course, the unsolvable problem created by a steel groin is that metal rusts and does so especially quickly in a saltwater environment. It turned out a steel groin had a very limited shelf life, but Newport officials hoped that a few years was all it would take to see if the groin, which extended 250 feet into the ocean, worked. But not surprisingly, a single groin along a long stretch of disappearing beach did not provide definitive answers. Some pointed to the increased amount of sand that had accumulated on the west side of the groin. Others countered by arguing that storm waves continued to wipe out large swaths of the beach. In their view, the steel groin was doing, in the best case scenario, nothing. At worst, it was creating more erosion. The experimental jetty was like a Rorschach test. Everyone had their own interpretation for what was happening. The 8th thing to know about the case of the missing beach. As we detailed in the episode's opening, by the end of the summer of 1968, West Newport was beachless and homes teetered on the edge of disaster. Panicked officials were forced to try something, anything, to restore the sand ASAP as well as provide a permanent fix to the problem of beach erosion that had plagued that section of coast for more than a half century. They ultimately decided on a two-prong approach. They restored the beach with 1.3 million cubic yards of sand taken from the Santa Ana River mouth and farther down the peninsula near the Balboa Pier. That's just an ungodly amount of sand. And if you're having trouble picturing it, imagine filling in a hole that's more than a mile long, 200 yards wide, and up to 10 feet deep in some places. Dump trucks and earth movers worked literally night and day to make it happen before the next storm hit. In the meantime, the City of Newport Beach and Corps of Engineers decided to go all in on the jetty plan. That year, they built a second steel groin, and in 1969, a year later, they constructed 4 additional jetties, these ones made of more durable granite, at 36th, 48th, 52nd, and 56th Street. So now, West Newport suddenly had 6 jetties, or groins, for the purist out there. As the months went by and the storm waves hit, the jetties kept most of the sand on the beach and even added to it in places. To finish the beach restoration plan, the last 2 jetties were built, these at 28th and 32nd Streets, and the 2 rusting steel jetties at 40th and 44th Streets were covered with boulders. Beachgoers could now take those formerly steel jetties for granite. Sorry about that. I'm a dad, and that was a joke. Plans for a 9th jetty, this one at 62nd Street, were scrapped because it was determined to be unneeded. The six-year beach restoration program, completed in 1973, cost the equivalent of $50 million today. And it's interesting to note the lack of opposition to the jetties. Under normal circumstances, you'd expect a string of jetties placed on a pristine beach to generate tons of outrage. But almost no one complained because, short of a mile-and-a-half breakwater or two-mile-long reef, the jetties were the only viable answer to restore the beach and save the nearby homes. As one newspaper account put it, quote, "What it means, of course, is that West Newport is going to have an odd-looking beach, but at least it will have a beach," unquote. And as it turned out, the beach in West Newport is not so odd-looking. Over the years, the jetties have become part of the beach's character and a favorite subject for photographers and artists trying to capture the essence of West Newport. Number 9. How the jetties were constructed is fascinating. And with this knowledge you're about to drink in, you'll impress your friends when visiting the beach in West Newport. First, the base of the jetties started only 30 feet from the homeowner's property line, and the jetties were placed under about 15 feet of sand atop plastic liners. So, if you're standing in the middle of the beach and in line with a jetty, you could dig down about 15 feet and hit the rocks. Other construction facts: if you think the jetties are different lengths, they are. The longest is the jetty at 56th Street, which was built 570 feet into the ocean. Today, it's almost half that distance, a tribute to the jetty's ability to build up sand on the beach. At 40th Street, the original jetty reached out only 190 feet into the ocean. Today, it's also about half that length. The original jetty work was quite sloppy, with construction crews from the Corps of Engineers leaving behind boulders underwater in the surf line and on the beach. Rocks also tumbled off the end of the jetties during the first series of storm waves. Later, after resident and city outrage, work crews came back and cleaned up the mess. Some final notes on the jetties. The average jetty used 18,000 tons of boulders taken from a quarry in San Bernardino County. If you want to get a handle on the size of 18,000 tons, it would be the equivalent of 3,000 large elephants. The jetties were built in a counterintuitive manner, at least for me, with smaller 3-ton boulders on the bottom, medium-sized boulders in the middle, and 10-ton boulders on top and at the end of the jetty to handle the impact of the waves. A huge crane put the boulders into place one by one, and workers used wet sand to wedge the rocks into place. I'm not sure how that worked, but that was the process. On a related note, the massive sand replenishing effort in West Newport had its issues as well. The biggest one being some of the work crews decided to fill the beach mostly with dirt, which was cheaper than sand, and then cover it over with a thin layer of sand. When the subterfuge was discovered, the crew had to replace the dirt with, of course, sand. The 10th and final thing to know about the case of the missing beach in West Newport. The jetties had one more effect that no one predicted. In a 1965 news story headlined, quote, "Newport's surfing days are numbered," unquote, Lifeguard Chief Bob Reed confidently stated that if the jetties were built, it would be the end of surfable waves in West Newport. The jetties, he argued, would change the course of the waves bending them before they break, and destroying their shape, thus putting an end to the wave's peaks and barrels. But as locals have long known, the days of surfing in West Newport were hardly numbered. In fact, the jetties in most cases created different and better surfing experiences. For example, the best board surfing wave in Newport Beach is arguably at 56th Street, where on the best days, waves roll in from the south and the jetty creates a point break type of wave, which is perfection for surfers. So instead of destroying the swells as they head toward the beach, the jetty helped deliver some of the best waves on the West Coast. All right, let's review what these eight jetties have meant to Newport since the early 1970s. Better waves? Check. No unsightly breakwater or two-mile-long underwater reef? Check and check. Safe homes? Check. A stable and wide beach for the first time ever? Check. And finally, a unique beach aesthetic that improbably became a bit iconic? Final check. So despite being the third or fourth option to stop beach erosion, the eight mighty little jetties of West Newport have proven the perfect choice to protect one of the best beaches in California. Thanks for getting into this podcast time machine with me and traveling back mostly to the 1960s to see how the case of the missing beach in West Newport was solved. We'll see you next time.